We made this. Hello and welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Universe for the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host Baz Greenland, and today we are continuing our journey through Marvel and Disney Plus series Moonlight, looking at episode 2, Summon the Suit. In this episode, Stephen Grant learns more about his alternate personality Mark Spector and the Egyptian god Khonshu as he comes face to face with mysterious cult leader Arthur Harrow. Joining me to discuss this episode is a very special guest, my wife, Jen. Not only is she a fan of Marvel like me, but she's also here to discuss the exploration of mental illness in the character of Stephen using her own insights as a therapist. Welcome to your first appearance on the We Made This, Jen.
Hello.
This is our second time we've talked about mental health, haven't we, on a podcast? So last year, Jem joined me on my Star Trek The Next Generation podcast, Beyond Farpoint, a Holosuite Media, where we talked a lot about the depiction of mental illness and trauma in Star Trek. Because we're here to talk about Marvel today, and it goes without saying that I fully embrace my inner geek these days. But what about you, Jem? What are your favourite things about the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Favourite things about the whole MCU? So I'm a great fan of Doctor Strange. He's probably, up till now, been my favourite character. I've loved the origin story that he does from the Doctor through his trauma to what then he becomes. Favourite film would certainly be his movie.
Right.
But also, I'm a big fan of Ragnarok as well. I think that's brilliant fun.
Yeah, I mean, Thor Ragnarok is absolutely one of my favourites. It's just ridiculously fun from beginning to end, isn't it?
It is.
So, Moonlight was something you're particularly intrigued you. What are your general thoughts on the show so far?
Very interesting. So far, I'm really enjoying it. I'm quite surprised at how well it's being done. And I'm absolutely loving the character of Stephen. Phenomenal.
I think when I said there's a character like Batman, but he has different personalities, and he's like, ooh, that's good.
Yeah. It's a gem program.
Absolutely, yes. So obviously, yeah, we talked a lot about mental health on the Star Trek podcast we did, but on this one, in Marvel TV show and films, we've seen a lot of heroes go through plenty of trauma. So do you think the MCU has done enough to tackle mental health struggles in these characters?
Interesting question. Done enough? It depends how you define done enough, I suppose.
Or have they been effective in showing mental health and trauma through the characters and the storylines?
In some places, I think so. I think, what's her name? Scarlet Witch.
Wanda Maximoff, yeah.
Wanda. Yeah, I think they've done, you know, a really good job at showing the trauma that she went through in losing Viz, and then everything that she created, that the whole series that she created, in order to try and process / avoid the trauma of it all, I suppose. Probably the other way around. Probably avoid and then process. That was the whole point of the whole program, which I thought was quite a fascinating depiction of how they worked in the human elements of, you know, this is what happens to a person when, for example, their loved one dies, mixed in with obviously the power element and the superhero element of it all, and putting that together to create what came out of that program.
Yeah, I thought it was a fascinating exploration of grief, which I think it was fun with all the different TV shows and the stars in it, but I think that the core part of that show was the exploration of grief, and I think it was fascinating to watch. I'm really looking forward to seeing what she does, obviously, in the next Doctor Strange movie as well, and how that kind of comes together.
in the MCU. Things like Tony Stark going through PTSD in the third Iron Man movie after what happens in the Avengers. But there was all, I don't really remember much early on. I think the one that kind of really strikes me more recently was Thor, actually. The way they, Thor after, you know, killing Thanos but unable to stop what happened, and then you saw him basically fat Thor in Endgame, which I know was kind of play for laughs, but I think what really struck me about that was just, you know, how much he was broken by what happened.
Yeah, I think actually thinking about it now, it was an interesting depiction of depression, really. And that, you know, yeah, you're right, they played it for laughter as fat Thor, but actually what it was really showing was a person, you know, inverted commas, a person,
yeah,
who really was very, very affected by everything that happened to him and hadn't really managed to get to a place where he could do anything with all of those feelings and everything that he was holding inside him. So, you know, he was doing the classic thing. He was eating his feelings.
Yeah.
And sat there in, you know, in the dark with his friends who were enabling it, you know, the Korg.
Yeah,
Korg. Yeah. Who, yeah, just like, yeah, we'll just sit here and play our video games, and that's fine. And actually, yeah, not so much after a while. It's fine for a little while, but then it became obviously, as they depicted, you know, problematic as time went on, and something needed to happen. Something needed to change. So yeah, I think that was quite a strong depiction of that, actually. Mm.
Yeah, no, I thought it was very well done. I know it was kind of, I mean, you particularly were quite upset that it was you lost the Thor of the previous movies.
Oh, fat Thor was so traumatic to me. No, where is the beautiful Thor? God, bring him back.
That's right. Apparently, he's back very soon in his new Thor 4.
Yeah. Thor 4, the fourth Thor film.
Yeah, that's right. Yes,
that's the one.
Yes. Or Thor: Love and Thunder. It was fun to kind of watch what's happening, but also, you know, just really did tap into that kind of depression and trauma he had as well. And I think, you know, talking about mental health, I mean, this is what's really interesting about Moon Knight as well, is, you know, the exploration of someone who's you know, a hero who is suffering with day-on-day mental health struggles. I think it's fascinating to watch. So let's go on to the episode itself then. So on We Made This, we give each episode a rough score out of 10. What would you give this episode 2, and what are your general thoughts on the episode?
Ooh, okay. Score out of 10, 8 or 9, pretty high.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, absolutely. And then general thoughts on the episode. I don't know where you want me to start, really.
We'll go into the details, but do you think it certainly held the promise of the first episode? Maintain that?
Yes. I'm, you know, one word answer. I think it grew nicely from the first episode. You got to start seeing some elements of explanation of what's going on, but not a huge amount yet. I think it's building actually at a really nice pace.
Yeah.
It's not too fast, not too slow, but you definitely are noticing the expansion of the storyline, the depth of explanation, but you still have lots and lots of questions by the end of the episode, which I think shows that it's just going to keep building in that vein.
Definitely. I would probably give a book maybe a solid 7 or 8. I think it was a good episode. I guess with Moon Knight is, I feel there's so much more to come.
Yes.
So it's definitely, it feels a little bit more of a slow burn than maybe something like Hawkeye. I think just was kind of big and fun from the start, and this one's a little bit different, maybe because it's an origin we haven't really had, I think, in the Disney Plus shows. An original character before, it's been Hawkeye, or Wanda, or Loki, you know, or Falcon Winter Soldier. They've really had established characters. This is the first time, I think, on the Disney Plus show where you've really had to kind of go from the ground up, really go over the origin story and explore from the beginning. So I think that makes it a bit more of a slow burn.
Okay. I personally always love origin stories. They're usually actually my favourite, whether it's in a programme or in one of the films. And then when you get established into the character and the storylines, I'm like, wow, is it really as good as the origin story? I don't know. Even when it's something like Spider-Man that you've seen a billion times, I still like the origin story more than often what comes after it. But I have to say, I think I do disagree with your number. I do feel it's higher than that. But I think maybe that's because I'm delving into the mental health
yeah.
element of it and enjoying that much more yeah. maybe than your average viewer. I don't know, but you know, getting to see how that's all unfolding, I'm sitting there going, that was good.
I'm definitely enjoying it. Oscar Isaac is great, and I think, you know, we'll talk about more about how he does those different personalities as well. And I'm really enjoying it, and I'm really enjoying seeing something different. And I think, yeah, I think there's been so many origin stories, but when they're done right, they're great. You know, Shang-Chi was a prime example of a movie that I went into there thinking, oh, it's probably going to be okay. And it blew me away. I think you enjoyed
yeah,
that
too.
Film as well.
Yeah, loved it.
So I think you can definitely still get origin stories, and they can be exciting and thrilling. You can throw you in really engaged. You know, you're not... I think the trouble with origin stories sometimes is you go, okay, well, you almost like, you know, there's bigger stuff to come in the storyline, right. So like the sequels can be bigger and better, and sometimes that's not always good. But sometimes you get like Winter Soldier or Thor Ragnarok, you know, movies that the sequels are even bigger than the ones that came before it. So I think an origin story has to have a really interesting hook. I think Shang-Chi had a really fascinating story there. I mean, and I love the visuals and the performance and everything about that movie.
The visuals were amazing;
they were absolutely stunning. And I think with Moon Knight, I think it's a very, very different type of show to something we've seen before. It almost isn't really feel like it's not like a superhero story at all, is it? It's basically this kind of supernatural, psychological kind of drama in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is maybe why I'm really enjoying it. I mean, I'm going to be really interested to see how, as it develops, because if it starts to move away from the original element of it, which is, you know, the multiple personalities, the DID that's got going on, and more into your standard superhero, supervillain, I'll probably become less interested. But that's just personal. Yeah.
Well, again, WandaVision's a prime example. I think the last couple episodes are probably the least interesting episodes of that show. They were still good. But I think once it became standard Wanda versus Agatha, you know, that kind of big showdown, it was a little bit less interesting. And then seeing all the mystery of what's happening with the various TV shows and how that tied into Wanda's grief, but also the exploration of grief as well. So yeah, I think when it got to a very standard hero versus baddie fight, I think, you know, it can be a little bit less interesting. And I wonder with this one, you're right, if the character of Arthur Harrow is probably going to be the avatar of this other Egyptian god. So it's going to be, you know, it's probably going to be two Egyptian gods in the avatar humans fighting each other. You know, it'd probably be fun to watch, but not necessarily as interesting as the stuff early on.
Yeah, I think if it is just going to end up like, you know, the hero and the anti-hero, or the hero and the villain, that I personally am probably going to go, yeah, okay, bored now. Seen that one before. Whereas I'm really loving, like you say, with WandaVision, the originality and the hook of, oh, okay, have not seen this before.
Yeah.
This is new. This is different. Where is this going to go?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get into a bit more detail then on episode 2, Summon the Suit. So obviously at the very beginning, we saw after our first glimpse of Moonlight at the end of the last episode, Steven's life really start to kind of fall apart. What do you think of those opening scenes?
I liked them because I think it showed a really human element to it. I think what came across was the confusion. And I'm really... like, and I'll go into this a little bit later on, how the best parts of this so far are actually the most human, most grounded elements of him, and how he's portraying what anybody, any, you know, average person might be feeling or thinking, and how they're behaving and the questions that they're asking, given such an absurd, ridiculous thing that's happened to him. And I think they've done a brilliant job with the juxtaposition between the mundaneness, I suppose, of his normality.
Yeah.
Outside of things like the sleeping disorder.
Yeah.
You know, where he just works in a gift shop.
Yep.
and then as the confusion grows, how quickly he's starting to move away from that mundaneness.
Oh, definitely. I also like, and I think Tony and Dan explore this in last week's episodes, how you're seeing his kind of awareness of the impact of this, of his dissociative identity disorder, and I'm sort of getting glimpses of these other personalities' lives, but we're doing it kind of through his eyes. We don't see Mark Spector in action, but all that bits when he was being chased last week in the ice cream van were fantastic. As entertaining as they were, it was also really interesting to sort of, you were only getting Stephen's eyes on what was happening. So absolutely, you had these kind of cuts of sections of his whole life cut out, and you were only witnessing the aftermath of it.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really nice depiction of how things could be for somebody who suffers in this way.
Yeah.
And the idea of just huge gaps in your life that up till now perhaps you hadn't been aware of for whatever reason, and I think they fill that gap in with more of the supernatural element here.
Yeah.
But yeah, to start that baseline of that journey with just what the
yes.
what, which is what anybody would think in that kind of situation. And I think he plays it phenomenally. Mm. I think he's absolutely remarkable as Stephen. I don't think we've seen enough Mark yet to judge that too much, but his Stephen is just brilliant in how he portrays the emotion, the variety of emotions that he's going through.
Yeah. As two Brits, what do you think of, there's been a whole big debate over his accent as Steve.
Oh.
Is it a bit too kind of cliche, obvious, maybe a bit too broad for the character? But I mean, what do you think of the accent that he puts on? Because obviously Oscar Isaac, you see it when he's playing Mark Spector, that's his real accent. So this is she created this accent for Stephen. So what do you think of how that comes across?
I actually didn't know whether he was British or American.
Right.
So I mean, that probably says it. I kind of thought if he is British, that's a very particularly strong, like you say, broad kind of Londoner accent. So I'm going to have to think about this on the top of my head because, like I say, I didn't know which he was. It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking off the top of my head now. I think he does. He must get away with it because otherwise I wouldn't be questioning which one was his original accent.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what you might have seen Oscar Isaac in. Obviously, you're not a fan of the new Star Wars movies, which he was in, but I think we saw him last year. He was in Scenes of a Marriage, the remake, the US remake we saw with Jessica Chastain, when the couple over the period of their life the marriage. So he was in that as well. That's probably the only thing you've probably seen him in.
Yeah, I don't recognise him particularly.
But I mean, it's a very, very broad accent, but actually, I think it kind of adds to the endearing quality of Stephen. I like that mundaneness and those kind of almost very chipper Britishisms and stuff and that.
Yeah.
And they almost can border on cliche maybe a little bit, but I think it suits the character so well. I actually love the accent. The more I hear it, the more I enjoy it. And it's not something you'd expect from a lead hero. And you know, I wonder, and we'll talk more about as a progression of the storyline, if we're going to see less of Stephen, more of Mark now than what happens at the end of the episode. But I think we'll see probably more Oscar Isaac, more his natural voice playing Mark.
Yeah.
But I quite like that Stephen is it's part of that endearing quality, that unexpected vulnerability to him that you wouldn't necessarily expect from a lead superhero character.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's actually very fundamental to the difference between Stephen and Mark is that he, perhaps when he was thinking about how to play this accent, the idea was, and you know, I've thought about this a little bit, the idea of the hero, the super something, and you've got, how do you juxtaposition that with the normal, the standard? And yeah, maybe part of that is yeah, you know, the job. Mm. I just work in a gift shop. Obviously, there's a reason about why he chose that gift yeah. shop of all gift shops in the world. But also, yeah, just that the standardness, the normality of it, the mundaneness of it. And maybe that was a part of the choice there.
Mm. Yeah, I think it works really well. And, you know, the way we're seeing, like, latest gators kind of thing. I love that. Yeah, I've heard that for years. It's great. It's a great little kind of bit of British slang there almost. And it's fun. I think he's done a really, really excellent job of making Stephen feel like a fully fleshed character who is just generally nice and unassuming and actually is the complete opposite of his character of Mark.
Absolutely. And he's done a really good job of making you really sympathise and empathise for him as a character, because he is this kind of, you know, almost nothing person, isn't he, at the beginning? You know, it's all been put together so that you can just go, oh, this poor guy.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't really have any friends. Nobody particularly likes him, but not for any particular reason. Mm. You know, he's a nice guy who just doesn't seem to have done very well for no particular reason. He seems to be, you know, bright enough. There's nothing necessarily in his way of having a better life except himself, if you like. And maybe then, you know, as we go through the show, we start to see the idea of, okay, maybe it really is himself in his own way, but they're clarifying that in the different versions of himself. Because you would absolutely, from a therapeutic point of view, if he walked into my therapy room, you'd be, you know, after a few sessions, you'd be looking at the idea of, okay, so what, you know, what do you want out of life? What's in your way of getting it? And from what I've seen so far of this character, you would probably end up in a place where you'd be talking about, so are you standing in your own way here? And so this is very much a dynamic portrayal of, oh, okay, yes, you are standing in your own way, but it's not you. It's the other part of you.
So, I mean, do you think Moon Knight as a show is handling DID quite well then in the way it's being portrayed? Or is it kind of Hollywoodized a little bit?
I think perhaps it has to be Hollywoodized a little bit. I do have to be a little bit careful in how I discuss this, because I will, you know, from a professional point of view, I have to say I'm a counsellor, a therapist. I'm not a psychiatrist. And from a professional point of view, if the full person with DID walked into my therapy room, I'd be referring him on to somebody with doctoral level qualifications. I wouldn't be able to actually treat him. So I have to be quite careful about what I suggest in terms of my, you know, from the basis of my own knowledge. But from what I do know and from what I can see, it has to be a little bit Hollywoodized, because actually the reality of this disorder is something that psychologically fascinating, but in reality painful, traumatic, you know, can be an excruciating way to live and an enormous amount of a lack of control.
Yeah.
You know, there's very few ways of living that describe less control in someone's life. So actually, if you portrayed the reality of this, it probably wouldn't be something that anybody would want to watch for entertainment value.
No, probably not. You're watching it and he's very good and very dynamic in the performance, but I'm there waiting for the next personality to appear. I know the very high level idea of what Moon Knight is, and that's it. So I don't know. I'm assuming there are more personalities in the comics. I mean, I would love to see. I think Oscar Isaac is so good as a performer, he could absolutely do different performances. I would love to see other personalities come out. I mean, it almost strikes me and maybe it's what I've seen on TV as well. There was a show called United States of Tar. We watched some of that where you had, I've forgotten her name, really good actress, but she was playing multiple characters in an episode. It was amazing to watch. But I'd almost like to see him play three or four or five different personalities, but I wonder if the show's so busy because it's got all the Egyptian mythology on top that really we're only going to see Stephen and Mark in this season.
Quite possibly. If it was down to me, yeah, you'd see seven different personalities and the Egyptian stuff can go jump. But...
maybe it's like a different show
but,
again.
But yeah, that wouldn't be a superhero Marvel for show, would it? So...
yeah, yeah. I'd like, you know, maybe another personality to appear, something quite different and done up again, but you know.
What would you choose if you could have another different type of personality?
I mean, it's interesting, you know, do you want someone who's different gender or someone, even like a child personality or...
Yeah.
Or actually, on the other, I mean, I know Mark seems to be quite ruthless, though, and not quite maybe as bad as they portray out to be, I think. But, you know, the other one, which is with a kind of a villain of some sort, some kind of...
Okay.
I don't know whether you would...
That,
I know
that wouldn't necessarily track with the reality.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Sort of
you would be far more likely, if you were going to stick with something more reality-based, to get some kind of childlike personality because, again, very high-level based just on my knowledge as it stands... The types of personalities that will come out in something like this is that you will have the original personality, the standard personality, which we don't know which that is
yet.
Yeah,
do you think it's Stephen or is it really not clear?
They're alluding to the fact that it's Stephen, but they had that scene, didn't they, when they'd swapped over.
Yeah.
And Stephen said to Mark, how long have you been doing this?
Yes.
And they were very obviously not answering the question, just saying a very long time. So actually, I wouldn't be surprised if it ended up being the other way around.
Yeah. But, I've heard Mark's got a wife. Suggests there's a period of time there, certainly.
Been a really long time. So yeah, you'd probably, you know, you could quite easily have a child personality in there because, yeah, you'd have the I can't remember the right terminology now, but the original personality. And then quite often you will have a protector type personality, which will be the one that comes out when there's any risk, any danger, any perceived threat. Not, it doesn't have to be actual threat, and even any perception of threat. And then you'll have the child-like personality that will often be, you know, much younger, single figures kind of. And that's the part that is the external expression in people that have this kind of disorder of perhaps what we all have a little bit of, that inner child.
Yeah.
That is the bit that is scared, the bit that needs protecting. So you'll have, you know, the protector personality will come out to protect the child personality, if you like. So it would make a lot of sense if they do bring out a child personality in it, and I'll be quite impressed if they do that.
Yeah. Interesting to see. So before we move on to more of the plot then, so what do you think of, it's very Hollywoodized certainly, but what do you think of how the dialogue plays out between Stephen and Mark through the mirror reflections?
Oh, I loved that.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved that. Oh, it was so good. I think the intercutting, the way it went from one to another and the film was brilliant. I'm trying to think of the right words now. It was just really good.
Yeah.
The bit that stands out to me, as well as the sort of standard ones that you saw all the way along where Mark was the reflection, the one that stands out to me is when they swap over.
And he's in that shattered reflection,
and
yeah.
And when Stephen is in the shattered reflection. And again, this comes back to the humanity of Stephen, which I think actually is the most impressive element to it for me. Because you get from Stephen a massive amount of empathy for Mark. When he's like, oh my God, is this what it's like for you? I can barely breathe. I can't move. This is how long have you been doing this? And the, you know, the compassion that comes from Stephen for Mark, who he has just recognized has effectively been stealing huge chunks of his life. And there's more of an emotional journey with that, isn't there, that we might go into in a bit. But the empathy that comes across for this other person, because he doesn't recognise it really particularly as part of himself. You know, this is somebody else who's taking his body. He keeps saying, you keep taking it. I won't give it to you, et cetera, et cetera. It's not, oh, okay, we're the same person, different parts of it. It's, here is another person taking this from me, taking my life, taking my body. And yet, how do you do this with such empathy?
Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it? So let's talk a bit more about Mark Spector then. So we start to get a bit more information about what's going on here. So we find out that Mark is this kind of almost James Bondy kind of action hero. Meets Indiana Jones. He raids in tombs with his wife Lila, and he's kind of, you know, fighting, killing bad guys, and you know, very skilled in combat. And but we also learn that Mark essentially is the one that made the deal with Khonshu, the Egyptian moon god, who we see him stalking quite a few times. The big kind of skeleton kind of figure in the cloth that kind of stalks him as well. And obviously he has made a deal with Khonshu to have his body, the avatar of Khonshu. So what do you think of all the kind of revelations around that? And also the relation with Layla, played by Mei Calamari as well. Calamari. I'm not quite sure you pronounce that one, but yeah.
I don't think her surname is Squid.
No, I don't think it's Squid.
Mark is growing on me. I think I'm so enamoured by Stephen that I'm just like, Mark is great as a reflection of Stephen, quite literally. But the character of Mark, I'm yet to get on board with completely. I think I'm interested to see where he goes, but obviously at this point in the storyline, we haven't had that much of him. We don't know much about him, so I'm just kind of openly curious about what is going to be made of him as a character. I think.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. You've only got snippets, and I think the way the episode ends, I think you're going to see a lot more of it moving forward. So, you know, I do wonder if maybe Mark is the kind of the prime personality, or how you want to describe it, the kind of the main host. I think Mark Spector might be the main character of the comic as well.
Right.
I think Stephen is in there, but it's a very different character. But yeah, so Mark is kind of the main character. I think we'll see more of him. And I think it's probably more we'll see of, you know, we've seen Oscar Isaac in a number of in the Star Wars movies as well, when he's a bit more of a kind of charismatic action hero. He can do that sort of thing as well. So I think Oscar Isaac was... Marvel were called him Oscar Isaac to be part of MCU for a while, and maybe that's why they wanted for this kind of role. But I think, saying that, like you, I think Steven is so endearing, so great to watch, that I'd quite happily watch more of Steven too. So I hope he's not kind of lost in the mix now.
So do I, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'll be very intrigued to see how well Mark is played then in that case, because I think Steven is done so well that if he can match that with Mark, I'll be quite impressed.
Yeah, definitely. I think Mark could easily be this more standard stock hero kind of. I mean, this is kind of loses. It's like Marvel's Batman slightly, with a kind of, you know, bit of a kind of dark past and a bit more gritty, and you know, and that kind of thing, and you know, fights at night because obviously Moonlight comes out at night, because Moon God and all that kind of stuff. So I'd be interested to sort of see if what person. I don't know if we've seen the personality of Mark, have we? We've just seen him. We know his skill. We know he's made this deal, and he's obviously, I'm assuming he's trying to divorce Layla because he's trying to protect her. So it's kind of, we understand his motivations, but not necessarily who he is as a character at the moment.
Yeah.
What did you think of Layla as a character? We saw in a few scenes. Did you think she made much of an impact?
No. In a word. I was like, I could hear you asking the question. You're going to say, you're going to ask me what I think of her. I don't really think anything of her yet. And maybe that speaks volumes in itself.
Yeah, she was fine. Again, it's like, because we don't understand Mark yet, and she's tied to Mark's storyline.
Yeah,
we might get more of her as the story progresses. Obviously, we discovered that she was hunting for this golden scarab, which leaves the tomb of Amit, this other Egyptian god, and she's there to kind of help. She can certainly, she's got enough skill herself to get herself out of a sticky situation, and she takes out that kind of henchman as well, doesn't she? So we know a little bit about her as skill, but I think, she's more there as another mystery in Mark's life than necessarily as a fully fledged character herself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious to see where they go with it, and I think there is a lot of potential there. You know, they haven't shut any avenues as to what kind of character she could be at this point, which I suppose points to good early writing in narrative. That's the word. But yeah, again, just kind of waiting to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think at this point, most of the story could have been done without her there.
Yeah, yeah. She just has another mystery to what's going on, certainly. Because one thing we did get a lot more of this time was Arthur Darrow, played by Ethan Hawke. So, obviously, there was, again, a few revelations. I think through him and his conversations with Stephen, you know, you found out that he was a former avatar of Khonsu himself, and he's now trying to awake this Egyptian goddess Amit, who I think some interesting, with Amit itself, some interesting, the idea of prejudging people who might do evil. There was some kind of interesting debate around, you know, like, would you kill a child, for example, if you knew they were going to kill? Absolutely. What did you think of that, of the ideas around that?
Yeah, I'm really interested in the kind of morality element of it. As our son Ben said at the time, he said, "Oh, it's the Hitler debate."
Yes,
and that's kind of what it boils down to, isn't it? Is like, what would you do? I think as you watch it, it's you can't help but have in your mind a certain element of, yeah, what would I do in that situation? And also the curiosity around. Why would you present yourself to be judged?
Yeah, we saw that with the woman in the last episode.
That was in the last episode, wasn't it? Yeah. But yes, I think there's a very new element to that. I mean, that's not something that's been quite so done in that way in the MCU.
No.
I think there's... the MCU does tackle this kind of big moral issues, like with stones on hand.
Thanos,
yes.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of, actually, is it morally righteous to get rid of half the population to save the other half?
Yeah.
So they, you know, this isn't, as a concept... You know, human morality and non-human morality, I suppose.
Yeah.
that isn't new, but the way that they're doing it is different enough that it's interesting. It's not, oh, okay, yeah, it's a Thanos thing again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's very much a villain, and the whole thing with this idea of this community that was dingy, like riddled with crime, is suddenly this kind of cult thing going on with everyone is kind of harmonious together and stuff.
Yeah, very culty, wasn't it?
It's also very insidious at the same time.
Yeah. It goes, this is the thing I suppose, it goes, unfortunately, so against human nature for everybody to be la 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 and we're all happy that you walk into that and, you know, or as a viewer, you step into it and you go, what's going on?
Yes.
This is weird. This is wrong.
It's creepy.
This is creepy. This can't be, you know. And there's just that baseline thing of this can't be okay. It's not, oh, isn't this nice and this is unexpected. Oh, let's join this. It's, no, what the hell? What's going on? What's wrong?
Yeah, they replay the cult idea. I think Arthur Harrow, they kind of based him on David Koresh. Waco and that kind of thing, cult leader. That was probably got the inspiration for this version of the character. I don't know enough much about Arthur Howe. I know he's in the comics, but I think when they got Ethan Hawke on board to play this character for the series, that's kind of, Koresh was a big influence of that character. So, and again, it kind of made it, which I guess maybe the idea of him and what he's doing is very insidious anyway, and prejudging people for being evil and everyone working together. There's something very uneasy about all that kind of community, all those scenes you see.
Absolutely, because, I mean, if it's based on something like that, then you're talking about all these people being effectively manipulated into, you know, into the worst possible scenario, really, at the end of it all, and that it comes from a place of, in this character then, if you were going to go with that, comes from a place of psychopathy, comes from a place of narcissism. no idea if that's the route they're going down with this particular character or if they're going to feed into more of the supernatural elements of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, on the basis of someone being, you know, almost someone you would bow down to in that way, absolutely, in order to do that, there's got to be a massive element of at very least narcissism in there.
Well, I think the other thing as well with Arthur Harrow, it's interesting that he was the avatar of Khonshu first.
Mm.
And Khonshu's there to do like justice. I think there's probably going to be some really interesting moral ideas around, you know, what is justice and, you know, and what line do you cross or don't cross, essentially. And maybe he crossed those lines when he was the host, I guess. But
well, that's the thing, isn't it? You've got to ask yourself, and I know I did, what happened to mean that now he's not the avatar? What did he do, or what did Khonshu do, or you know, how has it ended up like this?
Well, that's it. I wonder, did Khonshu go, no, you've gone too far, or was for Arthur Khonshu not enough?
Yeah,
because interestingly, he's now attempting to Amit, which, you know, it's going to go horribly wrong, and you know they're going to open this kind of crocodile god who deals out justice, and it's going to, you know, we're going to have some Amit versus Khonshu fight, I think, at the end. That's what it's building to. But it's, you know, the way he's gone down with his search for Amit, it's going to be something far more dangerous, I think, than Khonshu probably ever was.
I'm sure it's meant, yeah, you can see that he's more of an extremist, basically, isn't it? It's, you know, one of them wasn't extreme enough for the other. You just don't know which way around that is.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, before we move on, what do you think of Ethan Hawke's performance as Arthur Harrow then?
I enjoyed his performance, actually. I think it's... I would hope it builds a little bit, but as an opening, it was fine.
Mm, yeah.
Again, I suppose I keep being just so enamoured with the Stephen character that I don't notice the quality of the rest of the characters quite so much. And again, maybe that's telling that, you know, he's certainly not standing up to the quality of character that we're seeing in Stephen and Mark.
No, but I think he's much more of a subtle, more insidious character anyway.
Mm.
I mean, he's one of those kind of interesting villains where what he's talking about, it's not like, I'm evil, I'm going to take over the world. There's actually, you'll probably find something relatable, understandable what he's saying. Maybe you agree with it, it's different, but actually, you can, like with Thanos thing, you can almost understand the reasoning behind what he's trying to do.
Well, that's why it's this, the whole morality issues. Mm. If there was nothing in there that you couldn't relate to and see the perspective from and the argument for, it wouldn't be a morality issue.
No.
It would just be good and evil.
Yeah.
And it's not there, you know, they've gone further than that in the MCU these days than just good and evil.
Which is good. I think Marvel have had some great villains, but I think on the movies particularly, they've Loki was a standout, but actually a lot of the other villains were very kind of almost like bog standard bad guys, you know, that they've struggled a little bit. They've had some. They've had like Killmonger, Black Panther's cousin.
Yeah.
It was a bit more nuanced that. And Thanos again. So you can have some really interesting... I mean, you can have fun villains like... Hela from Thor Ragnarok, Kate Blanchett's and the time of her life. There's not much subtlety to that character at all, but it's ridiculously fun. But I think on the whole, a lot of the villains in Marvel have always been a little bit more one note, just their bad guys or their mirror reflections. I mean, you've got it here. He's obviously a mirror reflection of Mark. He's another avatar for another Egyptian god, but there's a little bit more something interesting behind him without that kind of supernatural element.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the kind of final scene then, when obviously Leia turns up with Scab and escapes with Arthur, and then Stephen refuses to let Mark take control. So he actually summons the suit himself and fights the jackal that Arthur releases. What do you think of the different look to Moon Knight with Stephen?
Brilliant, hysterical. Yeah. I absolutely love that. You said summon a suit, so yes. I summoned a suit. Like, you look different. What are you doing?
it was a lot of fun. And yeah, it was... It's not as cool, but it's almost quite dorky, but in the way that Stephen is.
Yeah, which absolutely. Really liked, it was a brilliant representation of Stephen trying to be Mark.
Yes.
And the difference between the two, you know, visual representation of, okay, so this is some, I'm supposed to be this, but you said do that, so this isn't this what it's meant to look like?
Yeah.
And how far off the mark he was in some ways. And yet a little bit of how he did have some of it, because obviously he had the face he got right, yes. if you like. So there was definitely that way of showing he's part of the way there. There is a connection in some way, but overall, just hysterical to watch.
Yeah. I did a little bit of digging on the trivia around this episode before the podcast. Apparently that suit is in the comic as well. That's a suit that he takes on when he works with the police. So it's a little bit less intimidating.
Right.
But I think the way they used that suit in the episode was great. The way they suited to Stephen's personality, I think, worked really well. Yeah.
And I think when he gets to the point where he punches the beast.
Yes.
I think that's brilliant because that is the culmination of his whole emotional journey that he's been on through this episode. So I said earlier, you know, he started with confusion and a hell of a lot of fear.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, that was the, again, as you would imagine, if this was something to you, what's the first thing you're going to feel? Friggin' frightened.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then very, very confused. And then you had, you know, some of the empathy coming through when they were swapped over, like I said. And then, but you also had some anger in there, didn't you? Where it was, I will never give you control.
Yes, yeah.
So he's suddenly realizing, you know, that this is real. And so then you get anger at it. But then you get to, there's like a grieving process in there as well. So once he gets through the anger, suddenly there's this recognition of loss. He's lost the life that he understood that he has, present tense. The life that he understood that he had, so you know, when he's asking, how long have you been doing this? That's a recognition, and then the start of a loss and a grieving process of, hang on a minute, not only is my life not what I think it is, and I'm not who I think I am, but I never was, or I haven't been for a really long time. So it's a loss of self, massively, and a loss of place in the world, and a whole loss of life. And so he's gone through all of that in, you know, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And he comes almost through. And I would imagine if they keep doing it as well as they have been, he'll go in and out of those kinds of ideas. But this was the first glimpse of you seeing him coming out the other side of that a little bit into, right, okay, so I've lost all of that. What have I gained in replacement? And actually, bang, punch. Yeah. Oh, I've gained this. I've gained strength. I've gained power. Yeah. And that is something that he never had in his original life. That life that he's mourning in those moments in his head. The one, you know, there was a lot, as I said earlier, you know, it was a bit of a blah life. He didn't have much in it. Mm. So suddenly he's going, oh, okay, I lost all of that, but look what I've gained.
Yeah. I mean, you get the strength when he fights back, but he still ultimately gives up his body to Mark because he's not strong enough to be able to take out the Jackal at the same time. So there's a limit to which we can do at this point. So, you know, he recognises at the end that he has to let Mark in, which he does. And that's when we get the classic Moonlight look now, where Mark kind of fights back and takes out the Jackal.
Yeah, which I suppose the thing that occurs to me as I think about it like that is actually quite sad. For him, that he, you know, yeah, he's been on this huge journey that I've just described. He's come through the other side. Aha, I have a bit of strength. But no, actually, I'm going to have to give all of it up because otherwise the alternative is die.
Yeah.
So I have no choice at this point. So all his control is gone again.
Yeah.
Probably even more than it's ever been before. You know, he's at least had some elements of control in his life before, and suddenly he loses 100% of it and gets put in that mirror, shattered mirror. And then feels nothing but the anguish, I suppose, of what Mark has been feeling when he's on that other side.
Mm.
So, yeah, I suppose from the superhero point of view, you might go, aha, yes, right, you know, Mark's in control. Now there's going to be some action going on here. Woohoo! But I'm with Stephen on this and the empathy and the, oh, no, poor Stephen's just lost. Basically, his whole world has just gone.
He doesn't get it back as well. This is interesting. It's the first time that I'm assuming the way the episode ends and what it's going to pick up next week is that Mark is in control now.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait and see, won't we? But I hope Stephen gets it back.
Well, true. But obviously, once he's gone through all that and Mark's killed the Jackal, Arthur gets a scarab anyway. So that's obviously at the stakes of what's going to happen with the Tomb of Ahmet, I assume, in Egypt. And then when he wakes up in that final scene in Egypt, it's Mark in control of the body. Normally we've had, as we saw the last episode, Mark was in control fighting the Jackal as Moon Knight in the last episode. And then when he woke up, it was Stephen. This time, Mark wakes up and Stephen's in the reflection. And that's the kind of that's the change. So I'd be interested to see if and when Stephen gets control back, because giving up, he's now lost that.
Arguably, there's an argument for that. I wonder whether also you could see it as actually we, the viewer, if they'd chosen, could have watched the other side of all that and just seen Mark's bit. So equally, Mark has been having, you know, a lot of control and a lot of power. And maybe they're just going to go, okay, now we're going to show you the bits where Mark is in control and Stephen is, stuck in the unconscious. Asleep, whatever you want to call it. And then, but you might start to see a bit of both.
Mm.
But yeah, you could be right. It could be that now Stephen is awake, conscious, but stuck behind, you know, not within control of the body.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, I'm really intrigued to see where it goes. Obviously, they've changed location now. They're setting it in Egypt. You've got the stakes raised and you've got Mark in control. So we've kind of completely shifted from where we were even at the beginning of this episode now. Yeah. So I'll be interested to see kind of where the show goes next. It may be a very different show next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will be.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'll like it as much if it is. No, go back to...
I guess we'll see. Before we wrap up then, you've got any final thoughts on... Final thoughts.
There we go.
Yes. Because you're my wife, I allow you to mock me on this podcast. It's fine. Any final thoughts on this episode?
Thor 4, the fourth Thor film. Go on.
I'm not going to do it. Go.
Final thoughts. I think I'm just intrigued on where it's going to go. I think they're taking it down in a particular direction, but you don't know enough where it's going to go yet. As a viewer who knows nothing about the characters, hasn't read the comics, you know, MCU lightweight, if you like.
Well, I'm the same, love the TV show, love the films, don't read the comics, so I just enjoy what's on screen.
So, I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, I agree. I'm intrigued to see where it goes, because there are some things that are kind of almost obvious. We know that now Arthur's got the scarab, he's going to get possessed by Ahmet, and you're going to have Arthur, Ahmet, and Mark or Stephen, whoever it is, Moon Knight, Khonshu, to fight together. So it's almost like they've signposted almost like the main plot line, or so you think. So, you know, I'm interested to see what else is around that to keep this really interesting, keep you on your toes as a viewer.
To make sure that it doesn't go more one note and get overly focused on one element as it goes down, because obviously, you know, MCU does have a tendency to do that.
Yeah.
Even if it's, like you say, in WandaVision, eventually it got there. Often, you know, you're kind of like, it's always going to end up at that point.
I would like to be surprised. I'd like to see things play out a little bit differently, but who knows? Yeah. Brilliant. So that is the end of our discussion on episode 2 of Moon Knight. Thank you for joining me here on We Made This.
You're very welcome.
Offering your psychological insights. We say it ever since Moonlight came out, we said we need to discuss this, so it's good to kind of share those thoughts on the podcast.
Oh, DID in a character, yes please.
Brilliant. So you can find me on various We Made This podcasts, including A Dream and Reform, the 5 podcast I host with Luke Winch, and The TARDIS Crew. It's a family affair, so I have The TARDIS Crew with my son Ben, a .2 podcast as well. Obviously, you don't do any podcasts unless I invite you on, so...
Okay.
Brilliant. But thanks for joining us for another episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to Podcast 616 and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Moon Knight is not all we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. And we'll see you next time on Podcast 616. It's a good night for Moon Knight.
Elsewhere on We Made This. the Failed Critics Podcast.
This Leatherface isn't a young guy anymore. He's a big guy. He's an older guy. Like, just sprint a little bit up the road and shoot him. Like, he's got a big chainsaw as well, that if he's swinging it around, he's got to be careful with it or he's going to hurt himself. He's not going to be quick. Literally, some of them have got guns at some point in this film. Just sprint 20 yards up the road and shoot him.
There's a number of plot holes in this where the hardesty character has the opportunity to point blank him and just doesn't do it. And it's just like,
yeah,
you've gone all this way, you've waited 50 years to see him again, and you could literally just blow his head off.
Yeah.
He's not posing any threat to you whatsoever. Yeah. In fact, he's sat on his bed waiting for you to do something.
And then you have a little chat with him. So no, just blow him away.
Free with this month's issue.
Quite often, things that go fast is good. But that's not, because it doesn't go really fast.
Yeah.
Just goes faster.
Yeah, and also when you've been ominously stalking, which is what that baseline does. Ominous. Then going fast is not, you know, like... Jason Voorhees doesn't run, does he? No.
He doesn't need to.
He remains ominous the whole time.
Yeah, but...
That's what this song should have done.
He's not Jason Voorhees. He's the T-1000's brother.
And did the T-1000 run? Not really.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, a bit, but not
that bit when he's fucking chasing after them in the car, he's definitely running.
Maybe
quite
that's
famously.
Why he did it. You know what?
Geek Polymath.
I don't think I'm a geek because I'm gay, but I think it fucking helped.
Well, listen, so I have theories about this.
Good.
Strap in for a conspiracy session.
Please.
It's all to do with being an outsider, which of course, in as fingers crossed, as society progresses and advances, we will hopefully get to the stage where... just sexuality will have nothing to do with you being an insider or an outsider, but it's massively a part of it. There's a reason Russell T. Davis felt such a strong connection to Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I think those kind of outsider bubbles overlap.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.